It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
It's Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
There's Saul Tillamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Ratner.
There's nobody I'd rather talk to right now at this very moment than John Tomasi of NBC Sports Boston. Nobody in the entire world.
Nobody. Words you've said a lot over the last 10 years.
It is. It is so true. But in this case, it's absolutely true. I do not tell a lie. And it could be about a lot of things. But what I want to talk about is Larry Lucchino. And I know that it's sort of the entirety of Tuesday, rightfully so, was made up with a lot of Larry Lucchino tributes and talk and everything else. And but you know, I don't think the conversation should stop. And John, one of the things I sort of wanted to dive into, I think you and I sort of experienced this with him, which was sort of the overarching competitiveness of him and how different he was compared to what we see now. I think that's the conversation that maybe is sort of we can move on and take to the next level, which is we aren't going to see another Larry Lucchino, or we haven't seen Larry Lucchino. Like, it's this I hate to say it, but like this cookie cutter mentality when it comes to executives and people being fearful of saying stuff and going after other organizations like he did. Anyway, that's where I'll start. Do you think that we'll ever see anything like what we saw with Larry Lucchino?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because the first thought I had once I had hit send on my Larry Lucchino appreciation was Larry Lucchino would not have let this happen to the Red Sox. And the Red Sox are off to a good start. Separate story. There is some exciting young talent. That's great. But the idea of you're going to finish last repeatedly and you're just going to subtract and subtract and subtract rather than trying to do something about it. I understand Larry Lucchino oversaw three last place finishes in his last 4 years as well. But he attacked it. They attacked it very differently. They spent in free agency. Obviously, Pablo Hanley did not work out. But it was never a sit back and wait thing for Larry Lucchino. I mean, if you think about what made him angrier than anything, it was Theo Epstein saying that we were going to have a bridge year, which was actually an accurate description of what they were trying to do to get from one set of prospects to the other, and they needed some veterans to bridge that gap. But Larry could not countenance like, oh, we're just going to be bad for multiple years until our prospects get here. Are you bleeping kidding me? Like, I'm just trying to picture the prime Larry Lucchino running the Red Sox like they are being run right now.
Yeah. And to go back to, I want to go back to when obviously he was brought from San Diego by John Henry and Tom Werner and that group. And the feud, people forget, like, the feud between he had with Steinbrenner, with George Steinbrenner, right? George Steinbrenner is like MF him all over the place. And this is the thing that I go back to. It's like, yeah, you know, the competitiveness and the willingness to say stuff that is going to ruffle feathers. And, you know, and you're right. I mean, he wouldn't take any of this sitting down. But I want to go back to sort of the rivalries and the willingness to sort of dive into the competitiveness of it all, right? I mean, it's the Steinbrenner thing. I was looking back at quotes. I'm like, holy mackerel, John. Like, that stuff just is never said anymore, ever, you know?
Yeah, and it's crazy because it wasn't just Steinbrenner. It was Randy Levine, sort of his counterpart with the Yankees. He loved poking at them, and the obvious one is Contreras. Everyone remembers that. But just think about it. He labeled them the evil empire in sort of a, you know, petulant moment of they got the player that we wanted, and somehow they're evil and the Red Sox aren't for trying to do the same exact thing. But that stuck. I mean, evil empire has stuck to the Yankees for 20 years. And you know that there is a piece of Larry Lucchino right to the very end that was proud of that. But you're right. It wasn't just the Yankees. I mean, think about his feud with Scott Boras. He was always getting into it with Boras, with his clients. Think about how the A-Rod situation when the Red Sox were trying to make that trade. And eventually Tom Hicks had to be like, I don't want to talk to Larry. This is, you know, Larry is messing this up. I don't want him to be a part of this. And Lucchino, you know, the deal is dead and all of this stuff. And he's firing out in public. And now, you know, different job, but you go back to, you know, the last couple of chief baseball officers for the Red Sox have been much quieter in their, you know, public proclamations.
But that's how it is with everybody, though,
yeah.
John.
Yeah, what? No, exactly. It's like you said, a cookie cutter is the perfect thing. Larry was not a cookie cutter. He was a daisy cutter. Like, he was, you know, somebody who was mowing people down as compared to the more. And the funny thing is, he's every bit as educated and erudite and well-spoken and all of that as all the cookie cutter executives in baseball. Princeton guy, Yale law, all of that. But he had that working class Pittsburgh upbringing and the, you know, college basketball career where he had to get every ounce out of his 5'11" frame to play point guard in the NCAA tournament. And there was just something, he was a fighter. He was somebody who, like, reveled in conflict. And you see a lot of conflict averse people running teams now.
Well, when I sat down with Mike Hazen at the beginning of spring training, I said this to him. This is one of the things I appreciate about Hazen. Now, Hazen isn't going to, like, drop bombs on the Dodgers or whoever, the rivals. But still, I said to him, like, I appreciate he talks like a human being. And I said, why don't more executives do this? It's like, well, you know, there is an element of professionalism. Like, well, you can be professional and human at the same time. And I think that's where I think a lot of these guys get it mixed up, which is they're so paranoid about saying the right things, forming the right sentence, and all of that. Lucchino didn't care. And by the way, Lucchino liked it. Lucchino, as you know as well as I do, like, Lucchino also liked the conflict. You know, those radio hits were, like, epic. They were great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he would get into it with Callahan for sure. And, like, yeah. That was – you could tell he looked forward to it. There have been a lot of stories. Sean McAdam wrote a great story at Mass Live talking to Tito Francona, you know, who said at one point he and Theo were basically having a shouting match about whether Papelbon should be a starter or a reliever. You go back to that spring training, oh, whatever year that was. And – Lucchino walks in and is like giddy, like almost like excited to watch two people fight because he loved that. I thought Bill James put it best on Twitter. He said Larry embraced creative conflict. And it's like, that's the kind of thing, that's not an easy environment to work in, but it's rewarding when you get it right and it can lead to great things. And that's how Lucchino, that's why he always pushed. That's why I think he described his own managerial style or his default style as scorched earth. And you could see why that is not for everybody, but when you're in a results business like baseball, it gets the best out of people, and the ones who can't hack it move on.
You know, in terms of his legacy with the Red Sox, it is a little convoluted too, because you have obviously you have what he did in terms of the success they had on the field during his tenure, but you have the weird thing with Theo in 2005, almost like the power struggle there. And then you get to the, like, well, who's making, even after Theo left in those last few years, like, who's making the decisions? Is Larry making the decisions? And, you know, the Bobby Valentine thing in this convoluted, like, well, Ben Sherrington's a GM, but how much is Lucchino getting involved in negotiations and all of that? That was the weird part about, like, what he, like, his existence. But I think that the overall arching thing, it's his, which is he's wanted to win. Like, he wanted to win. Like, that is, everyone says they want to win, but you said at the beginning, like, this, the course correct, yeah, sure, they had bad years, but the course correction, the head of the course corrections was Larry Lucchino, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about his mixed legacy, when you're as volatile and volcanic a personality as he is, you're not going to get everything right. You're going to overreact to things. You're going to maybe make moves out of passion that you shouldn't, or you're going to take big swings. Put it that way. You're going to take big swings, and big swings often end in strikeouts. And so Larry had a lot of K's, you know, the Theo thing that you mentioned, certainly Bobby V, what's going on there? Some really questionable decisions in free agency. The fact that he did rub a lot of people the wrong way, and maybe A-Rod ends up a member of the Red Sox, if not for Larry Lucchino. I don't know if that would have been good or bad, but certainly at the time, it seemed like a bad thing that they had lost him to the Yankees. So there's nothing simple about Lucchino. His legacy is going to be complicated, to use a Theo word. But you're right. At the end of the day, he always prioritized not just going for it, but the Red Sox were always in the mix on his watch. Mm. And probably one of the most dismaying parts of the last 4 or 5 years since Dave Dombrowski left has just been watching them slide out of the mix. Now, maybe they're working their way back in now. They're playing exciting baseball and everything, but it's
4-2
almost like
back in the mix. 4-2 back in the mix.
4-2 back in the mix. 667 winning percentage. But that's in spite of how they've run the team, not, you know, because of this grand overarching plan. It's like they could be a lot better right now if they had more pieces. And, you know, I'll just bring it back. The theme is Larry. If Larry was still here, I think they would have those pieces.
All right, give me your best Larry story.
So I wish I could remember what it was that I wrote, but I wrote something in the Herald that he did not like. I took a gratuitous shot at him, I think. It was something about his hatred of the Yankees. And I think I described him as oiling himself up and reveling in something bad that had happened to the Yankees or something. But he did not like it. And so I passed him on the ramps. And he stopped me to say that he thought it was a cheap shot. He didn't like it, whatever. And then I was basically like, have a sense of humor. I don't know. I was a little flip. And all I remember was he started almost like snorting at me like a bull. Like, he was so angry. He wasn't saying words. He was just like looking at me all red and angry. And I was like, oh my God, what the hell is happening? But, you know, eventually it was fine. Like, yeah, I think he always thought that I was a quote unquote Theo guy. You know how he always had ideas of who was, you know, what. And so he never thought that I was someone who was quote unquote on his side, which, I mean, whatever. Like, I certainly ripped both of them plenty in the paper. But yeah, so that was it. It was Larry like snorting at me like a bull on the ramp, you know, going down towards gate D.
Again, it comes back to, so this is the last thing. It comes back to what we said at the beginning. Will there be another guy like this? Is that, and I say that, I know it's hyperbole, but it's, if you think about it, the way that things are trending, the acceptance of personalities and big personalities, there isn't that acceptance anymore. I mean, I don't think so. So will there be? Will there?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the game has become much more corporate, much more analytical, much more buttoned down. And you have someone like Larry who had the intelligence and all of those kind of skills, just the pure brilliance, he could have walked in that world. But he's a product of a different time. He starts in basically, you know, on the Watergate, you know, as a young lawyer. is raised as someone who's very pugnacious, and that has been sort of bred out of the current crop of executives. Who knows? It may just take, you know, one team to win going the Larry way, that there's a everything cycles and it'll come back to him. This is a terrible answer, but
no, it's a good answer.
You can edit this out. No, maybe things will switch, but for the way it is right now, no, there is no one close to him. And it's kind of fascinating when you consider that Dave Dombrowski is such an outlier now, and it's not like he's a bomb thrower or anything like that, but he stands out as someone who is willing to buck the current trends a little bit, and he's got the Phillies in a good place as a result.
All right, you did an excellent job.
I was great till the very end there. I got a little meandering.
No, I think you pitched a perfect game. Excellent.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.